This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Kip Eideberg, Senior Vice President, Government and Industry Relations at the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. AEM's Kip Eideberg is next. Wanted to take a moment and talk to soybean farmers. Nearly 500,000 of you are in the U.S. growing over 4 billion bushels of soybeans a year. And the Soy Checkoff is working hard to grow demand, innovating, testing, and showcasing new uses in new industries such as firefighting foam, tires, straws, shoes, or 1,000 other products. To learn more, visit unitedsoybean.org and keep on growing. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Farm and construction equipment manufacturers are feeling the pinch of higher interest rates, a lack of global trade agreements, and a sluggish economy in the U.S. and around the globe. Kip Eideberg admits the industry is cyclical, but that doesn't make the challenge any less daunting.
Well, we have certainly seen, a downturn in the sale of farm equipment. Tractor sales for the month of September decreased about 19% compared to the year before, and about 13.5% year to date, according to our most recent data. We've also seen sales of combines fall during the month of September, dropping just north of 40% compared to 2023. And 21.5% on the years. As I said, there is a bit of a downturn right now, but we tend to look at this data over a longer period of time. And so, we're seeing a downturn, but it is cyclical. We certainly expect things to pick back up again once we get through the election. Interest rates keep coming down, and we get the certainty that a farm bill will bring both the farmer and the manufacturer.
How are used machine prices holding up? I know your members concentrate on selling new paint, but a lot of times the value of that used equipment is important toward the sale.
We're seeing much more stable prices in that market, and so we are encouraged that there is certainly enough inventory, both in the used and the new segments, for any customer that's looking to make a purchase, whether it's a tractor, a combine, or any other piece of agriculture equipment.
How do you expect 24 is going to wrap up when we look at the last couple of months of the year?
Well, we think overall it will be a good year for agriculture equipment manufacturers. Again, and I hate to sound like a broken record, Jeff, but it's going to depend to a certain degree on whether or not Congress can get a farm bill done, or at least make meaningful progress on a farm bill between now and the end of the year. That is really, the biggest storm cloud on the horizon for not just American farmers, but agricultural equipment manufacturers. I mean, we are staring down an economic disaster if Congress continues to kick the farm bill down the road and refuses to take action. I don't mean to sound dramatic, but without the farm bill and the certainty that it brings, the whole agriculture economy is going to be in for a rough time.
Well, the U.S. is no longer the major supplier of commodities to the world, but we are producing more than we have in our history just because domestic use is certainly higher. There's been tremendous growth in South America, particularly Brazil, but also in Argentina. Are you seeing a demand for new or even used equipment moving into those regions as those farmers expand production?
Yeah, there's no doubt that there are opportunities for the industry, not just in South America, but around the world. I mean, we're seeing concerted efforts in Africa, for example, to improve the way that they grow food and feed not only themselves, but the region. We're seeing investments being made in upgrading agricultural practices around the world. That's where precision agriculture technologies come in. So there are lots of opportunities for the industry to meet the needs of farmers and ranchers in markets around the world. But that's when we come back to some of the hurdles that we're facing, right? We do not have enough free trade agreements with countries in those markets. And we are concerned about potential return to the tariff wars of 2017, 2018, 2019, where, our industrial policy elicited responses from not just our competitors, but our allies around the world, which, you know, ended up hurting not just equipment manufacturers, but our farmers' ability to sell their products to customers around the world.
We should take a minute during our interview here to talk about the Manufacturers Express earlier this year. What messages were you able to share, and what did you receive back from your members and their workers?
We spent about 3 months, Jeff, traveling around the country, 13,500 miles, 22 states, 80 stops at equipment manufacturers, you know, from Iowa, Nebraska, all the way down to Oklahoma, the Deep South, up along the Eastern Seaboard, and throughout the Midwest. We had a fairly straightforward message, certainly to those who hope to represent us in state capitals and in Washington, D.C. come next year, and that is that we don't ultimately care whether there's an R or a D behind their names. What we care about is what they will do to strengthen American manufacturing. You know, we need a tax code that is wired for growth. We need a workforce that is ready to take on the challenges of the 21st century economy. We need trade deals to open up more markets for equipment manufacturers and our customers. We need common sense immigration reform so we can address our worker shortage. And we need to stem the regulatory onslaught that is making it more difficult to create jobs in America. So that was the message. And I got to tell you, having spent about 2.5 of those 4 months on the road, I think the message was well received by most. And I can tell you that the 15,000 or so equipment manufacturing workers that we met along the way, you know, they're ready to do their part, roll up their sleeves, get to work, build more great equipment here in America. We just need policies that help make their jobs a little bit easier.
Aside from Congress and aside from the White House, there were ballot initiatives as a part of these fall elections. What were some of those that could have impact on your industry from those states where they were taking place?
We have been laser focused, and I'm glad you brought this up, Jeff, not just on policy that is being made in Washington, D.C., but policy that is being made in state capitals around the country. And we've been tracking, you know, issues and initiatives related to infrastructure investment, investments in innovation funds that will help, you know, many cases our customers invest in the latest technologies, whether it's on the agriculture or the construction side. We've been tracking initiatives meant to rein in some of the regulatory overreach that we've seen in some states across the country. And we've been encouraged that there are several states that are considering further tweaking their tax codes to make it more advantageous for equipment manufacturers to, you know, invest in their operations, open up new production facilities, hire more people. So those are some of the issues that we've been focused on, and I think we are generally optimistic that things are moving in the right direction at the state level.
So, Kip, let's leave the election aside and focus now on the lame duck session of Congress. What are AEM's hopes here in the last days of the 118th?
Well, I will say, Jeff, I am old enough, sadly, to remember far too many lame duck sessions where everyone in Washington pinned their hopes on Congress to finally deal with that one issue that they've been working on for many years, only to see nothing come out of a lame duck session. So we are trying to be reasonable in our expectations in terms of what Congress can get done. But obviously, we need a farm bill. We need a long-term farm bill. I think the key point here and the point that we have been making to lawmakers on both sides of the aisle is that if they do not act during the upcoming lame duck session, farmers, ranchers, and about 650,000 American workers in the agricultural equipment manufacturing industry and the entire economy will feel the consequences, and it will not be pretty.
So the big debate on one side of the aisle is about nutrition programs. For the other, more farm of the farm bill, they want higher certain reference prices and a better safety net. So let's leave that debate to the side. Kip, are there areas in the farm bill of either loan guarantees or other financial measures that would help farmers that indirectly would also help you?
Yeah, we have been pushing for the inclusion of benefits in the form of either loan or loan guarantees or low interest loans, and there's a number of ideas out there, but all meant to help farmers invest in precision agriculture technologies. There's a number of bipartisan bills in the House and in the Senate that will set up these programs under the umbrella of USDA that would give particularly smaller and mid-sized farmers an opportunity to upgrade their equipment so that they can get more out of their equipment. We are seeing a trend, a steady trend, towards equipment that will, and we've seen it for some time, that is increasingly technologically advanced, that helps farmers reduce downtime, maximize uptime, reduce the inputs that they use, get more efficiency out of the number of hours that they're running the equipment. And our hope is that the final product, the final farm bill, hopefully during lame duck, but if not, early next year, will include some of these programs that will make it easier for farmers to access these technologies, because we see that as a game changer for our farmers and ranchers. It's going to allow them to do a lot more with a lot less.
So how would a simple extension of the 18 Farm Bill leave your customers and leave your industry?
Well, I have to tell you that policy innovation, such as, for example, a precision agriculture loan program, policy innovation only happens through regular order. When our elected officials in Washington, whether it's the House or the Senate Agriculture Committees and other stakeholders, sit down through a deliberative, thoughtful process, discuss how to make changes, improvements, to a piece of legislation, in this case the Farm Bill. But when you govern through extensions, when you have cliffs hanging over your head constantly, meaning, you know, you're going to go over the cliff and vital programs are going to expire, then you don't see any of that policy innovation. Then the onus is simply to try to get both sides together and agree on an extension, which means that you forego those innovations, those improvements.
So let's lay the Farm Bill to the side. In 25, tax legislation is staring straight at this Congress. Now, there's also a debt ceiling debate. There's also funding the country. But tax issues are coming due in 25. So what are specific issues inside the tax code that AEM certainly will be in the ear of Congress over?
First and foremost, it's to ensure that the tax code supports innovation. Innovation is one of America's greatest strengths, and it's a significant contributor to job creation, particularly in the equipment manufacturing industry, economic growth, competitiveness, and even national security. In fact, the private sector in the United States accounts for more than 75% of total R&D spending. And many of the small businesses in this country, and we have about 1,100 member companies, I should say as an aside, many, if not most of them, are small businesses, they alone account for about $90 billion of all private sector R&D. And so research and development is crucial to the long-term growth, not only of our industry, but of the economy. And for nearly 70 years, the tax code recognized the importance of R&D. It allowed businesses to fully deduct their R&D expenses in the same year that they were incurred. But unfortunately, starting in 2022, the tax code has required businesses to amortize or deduct over a period of years their R&D expenses, which makes R&D more costly to conduct in the United States. And so we need to see Congress, as they turn their attention to either extending or making permanent some of the provisions in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, we need them to be laser-focused on R&D. The other piece, which is equally important, is to help enable equipment manufacturers and our dealers and distributors to finance growth. And so before January 1st, 22, businesses' interest expense deductions were limited to 30% of their earnings before tax, depreciation, and amortization. Now, interest deductions are limited to 30% of earnings before interest and tax. While that might sound wonky, it makes a huge difference for small businesses, equipment manufacturers and others, including distributors and dealers. And by excluding the depreciation and amortization, the stricter standard acts as a tax on investment, which makes it more expensive for capital-intensive companies, and our industry is capital-intensive, Jeff, to finance job-creating growth. So we need to figure out a way to make it more financially viable, not less, for companies to continue to finance their growth. And then finally, we need to make permanent, you know, key incentives for capital equipment purchases, a 100% deduction for the purchase of equipment and machinery in the tax year purchased, was in place from 27 to 2022. That is now being phased out. So all of these provisions are going to make it less financially sound for companies to invest in R&D, invest in expansion of their manufacturing facilities, invest in more jobs, invest in their communities. And it will make us less competitive on the global stage, while some of our biggest competitors have tax codes that do the opposite. So this puts us at a massive competitive disadvantage vis-a-vis countries like China, for example.
It may be a redundant question, but from the side of the farmer, advanced depreciation, Section 179 and others that deal certainly with the higher economic capital investment that producers are operating in today.
That is another critical part of our priorities for tax policy in the 119th Congress. Obviously, you know, the long-term prosperity and growth of our customers is key to our success. And I should say, making changes to the estate tax, you know, ranks right up there as well. And we know that that is a key priority, not only for small family and mid-sized family-owned equipment manufacturers, but for farmers and ranchers as well, making sure that they are able to pass along the farm, in this case, right, to the next generation. If we don't do that, we're going to be in trouble as a country. And we know, speaking of that, looking at recent data from USDA, we have lost more than 140,000 family farms over the last 5 years. And that trend will likely accelerate if Congress doesn't fix some of these tax provisions, Section 179, the estate tax, you know, bonus depreciation, capital investment. All of that is connected, right, Jeff? All of that makes it easier for farmers and equipment manufacturers to do business in America, and that's what we ultimately need Congress to help us with.
Has the push for electric vehicles peered its way into the equipment manufacturing and production business?
So we are, as an industry, in favor of all of the above when it comes to, you know, how equipment is powered. Many of our member companies, if not all, are spending a lot of time and effort and resources on R&D in terms of coming up with various new power solutions. That goes back to the importance, you know, of R&D, right, in the tax code. And we've seen some really exciting advancements in the industry, whether it is electric, hybrid electric, hydrogen. Those are all have a place. But let's not forget that the internal combustion engine also needs to have a place in the mix. That's not going anywhere. So when we see states making noise about banning it by an arbitrary year, that is obviously not helpful. And that's going to not drive further innovation. It will actually stifle it as companies are now being forced to deal with, you know, onerous regulations and high compliance costs. But to go back to your question, we're seeing all of that, and there's some really exciting innovations being brought out from the industry. You know, earlier this year, we brought about 100 pieces of agriculture equipment to the National Mall as part of our Celebration of Modern Agriculture on the National Mall initiative. It happens every other year. And you saw a lot of electric, hybrid electric, even some hydrogen on display. And that's just where the industry is going, constantly innovating, constantly trying to provide new and exciting technology and meeting our customers where they're going.
So staying out in the future, I've watched agriculture since I was a kid on the farm and big machines and bigger machines and even bigger machines. And now we have big machines that have incredible amounts of technology. I think you mentioned that a combine has more codes than the space shuttle. Am I correct?
Yeah, more lines of code than the space shuttle. That's correct.
So now let's talk about the future. Does the future keep getting bigger because the roads are only so wide? I hear those futurists that talk about it, instead of one big machine, maybe there's six autonomous machines that are smaller, that are working in unison in the field. High-tech stuff. Where is artificial intelligence in machines today? And is there any limit on the frontier of what agriculture machines might look like in the future?
Well, that's a lot of great questions wrapped into one there, Jeff. Look, we have to continue to innovate in order to continue to stay ahead of not only the competition, but also, again, to meet our customers where they are and where they're going, right? We are constantly hearing, and this is true not just from agriculture, but for construction and for mining and other segments, right, that customers want more out of their equipment. They want to, again, reduce downtime, maximize uptime, maximize output and productivity, reduce the number of hours that they're in the machine while also getting more out of that same machine. And so innovation is key. I can tell you that there are already artificial intelligence applications in almost every piece of new equipment that comes off the production line. So artificial intelligence is already here. It is part of our industry. Now, what you're talking about is more, where we might be going, right? So you're looking at, a fleet of equipment, different types of equipment operating harmoniously, either at a construction site, along the road or on a farm. And certainly we have many of our member companies, who are already pushing the boundaries in those areas, right? You're seeing autonomous planters. You're seeing, autonomous tractors working in tandem with a autonomous grain cart. You know, on the construction side, you're seeing autonomous excavators. There are already autonomous or remotely controlled mining trucks operating in mines, around the world. And that also helps improve safety, right? We hadn't talked about that. That's another huge benefit, particularly in a mining environment. If you're, several, if not thousands of feet underground, if you can take that operator and put him or her in a trailer, above ground and controlling not just one but a fleet of mining trucks, you're going to improve efficiency and you're going to reduce risk to the operator. So it's already there, Jeff. I didn't mean to go long on you on this one, but the future is here already when it comes to equipment, and the future is only going to get more exciting, as we go down the path of continuous innovation and growth.
So how much is the future being limited by the capability of broadband in the area served?
It doesn't matter how sophisticated your tractor or your combine is if you cannot take full advantage of the technology that comes with it. And so we've been staunch advocates for a long time of more sustained investment in connectivity. We saw quite a bit of it in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act that the current president signed into law a few years ago. We need more of it. We still don't have an accurate picture of where the black spots are. We need to continue to map out, particularly when it comes to farmland, where connectivity exists today and where it doesn't. We also need to remember that we need, not just wireless. We need fiber. We need broadband. We need all of it, right? Because we need to connect not just to the farmhouse, but then beyond to the field. And so connectivity, much like power solutions, we are all of the above. But we do need to ensure that we have sustainable, in terms of reliable, right, and affordable connectivity. So we need more of it, period.
Well, Kip Edinburgh, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Thanks for your insights. Kip, it is Open Mic, and today you get the last word.
I would be remiss, Jeff, if I didn't take that opportunity to tell all your listeners to make sure that they go vote. You and I have had the opportunity, and I thank you for having me on, by the way, to talk about a lot of the challenges, opportunities facing the industry, and the policy solutions that we would like our elected officials to advance on our behalf. But look, if we do not participate in the democratic process, if we do not cast our vote, decide on who we want to represent us, it seems somewhat hypocritical of us to complain about the outcome. So regardless of who you support, state, federal, please go vote.
Our thanks to Kip Edinburgh, Senior Vice President, Government and Industry Relations at the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.